Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Sports Grid Network.
Welcome, everybody, to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Show. I'm Drew Dinkmeyer, alongside my co-host, Mike Leone, and this is our Wednesday game slate breakdown for the main slate on both FanDuel and DraftKings. This week, week one, it is on Wednesday. Going forward, it'll be on Thursdays. I will be here each and every week breaking down our first thoughts on each of the games that are in the main slate. This will be a podcast that is available on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football podcast feed. Subscribers in the past are used to having this behind the paywall. This year, we're taking this out in front of the paywall. Our Saturday update is still going to be behind that paywall. And if you want to get a look at that, all of the information that we have behind the paywall, you can use the promo code LAUNCH for 10% off. While we're not in our normal spot, Mike, we will be in that Thursday spot. We are replacing it tomorrow with a Showdown podcast featuring Davis and Drewby, Colin Drew. Showdown champion last year for nine different GPPs. They will be breaking down that Thursday Chicago Green Bay opener. Usually that podcast will appear on Monday nights as we look to break down kind of Monday night football. But since it's week one, we might as well start with Thursday. We might as well get this content out early, Mike. So how are you doing in advance of week one? I know you've been busy grinding sims and projections and all that good stuff.
You know, college football is ruining my life because there's a million players. There's TJ Ward, T.J.Ward, TJ Ward the second. But other than that, I feel we're in a pretty good spot with NFL. You know, we worked really hard to get stuff out in a pretty timely fashion. Our projections for week one are live. We feel, you know, really good about them. Which, you know, even early in the week, of course, we'll adjust stuff as injury things and whatnot happen. But I'm excited. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how I want to attack the main slate, which we'll focus on. I think right now for week one, I might do a lot of MME and get my process down for mass multi-entry and not have to worry too much about single entry three max, just because I don't really want to mix the two right off the bat. I just want to make sure I have my settings in the optimizer ready for week one. So, you know, a mixture of a little bit tired, but definitely excited.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great GPPs out there this week for DFS players, as there usually is week one, with, you know, probably some overlay around the industry or some sites that are doing some rake-free GPPs, so make sure to kind of take advantage of those. If you are looking for more specific tournament thoughts and kind of how we go about building groups and stacks and ownership exposures, we'll cover most of that stuff in our Saturday update that'll be behind the paywall for Daily Roto Premium subscribers. As a reminder, use that promo code LAUNCH for 10% off. But Mike, let's get into the game by game breakdown here. We've got 12 games on this main slate. We'll spend, you know, somewhere between 3 to 5 minutes on each game, try to keep this pod relatively tight. Let's start with the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champion of fantasy football, in my mind. I mean, they were the team that every week last year you wanted to have exposure to. And really, that's what we care about. We care about DFS. We care about fantasy football. You know, if the Patriots won the real Super Bowl, that's fine. But the Chiefs were my champion last year. They travel to Jacksonville and take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. A game total over 50, one of the higher totals on the slate. Kansas City, mild road favorites here. This game figures to be popular as, once again, the Chiefs figure to carry over a bunch of ownership from last year's success.
Yeah, and I did a GPP article for the site today kind of simulating some positional values, you know, going through using our range of outcome projections to simulate what are the chances a receiver or a running back is the top scorer at the position or the top value at their position. And when you looked at value in particular, this game really stuck out as one that you can stack in a variety of ways. Obviously, on the KC side, as you mentioned, they were the fantasy football champions last year behind the ridiculous season from Mahomes. You've got, you know, Travis Kelce, who's the clear-cut top tight end. Tyreek Hill, who in our range of outcome projections has, I believe, the highest 90th percentile outcome because he's a really high yards per target guy. And that matches up with the history that we know about him. And then even Sammy Watkins and Damien Williams are fine secondary pieces. And you might be wondering, well, what do I do on the Jacksonville side? Because Not exactly a whole ton of firepower over there, but you look at this, Drew, their team total is 24.5 at home. Like, that's really strong, and we've saw teams last year, you know, they played up in pace a little bit when they faced Kansas City because they were trailing against a pass-oriented offense, and the pricing is so cheap. You've got DeeDee Westbrook, 4,800, Chris Conley, 3,100, DJ Chark, 3,300, even Jeff Swaim at 2,900. That those prices mesh really well with bringing a guy back on the Kansas City side of things.
Yeah, and Jacksonville, obviously, we're waiting for practice clarity on Marquise Lee, but it doesn't sound like he'll be ready to contribute heavily early in the season, and that opens up the possibility for a more condensed offense on the whole from Jacksonville, which is not something we've seen in the past. They also have the potential to be a little bit more pass-oriented this year than they have in the past. I know there's a lot of excitement in season-long about Leonard Fournette and his role potentially in the passing game, which will be something to monitor, but I think this game is going to be one of the most heavily targeted games because of those two things, because of the Chiefs being an offense that has such high-end potential that people are going to want to go to, and because the Jaguars fit very nicely alongside them in terms of producing value with some of either the wide receivers or Fournette. And I think these games are very game stackable. It doesn't mean you shouldn't stack them. It just means I think they are going to come with some level of ownership. If you're talking cash games from these teams, I think, you know, I think Patrick Mahomes is certainly in play. Travis Kelce heads up the tight end position, and week one is usually one where there's a lot of value and you can certainly afford him. So I think he'd be in play. The Kansas City receivers and running backs, I think, are more secondary or tertiary options. I don't think they'd be primary targets. Tyreek Hill is affordable on FanDuel, where, you know, his touchdown equity is so strong from scoring double digit last year. On Jacksonville, I think DeeDee Westbrook or Chris Conley are viable. I think Fournette's kind of on the edge. There's some stronger running back plays that I like a little bit more. But I do think there's a lot of plays in this game, as you would expect with a total above 50, one of the higher totals on the slate. And I think this game will be heavily targeted in GPPs. Doesn't mean you can't stack it, but I think it means that if you are going to stack it, you should be trying to maximize correlation with the double stack, especially if you're using Mahomes and potentially bringing it back. You could bring it back with one or two players if you're going the Chiefs stack with bringbacks from the Jaguars.
Yeah, completely agree. And I don't even mind, you know, messing around with the Foles double stack because those guys are so incredibly cheap.
And those will come with lower ownership because I don't think Foles is going to be owned.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the way to get the lower ownership. It would just be like a really big game stack. I think it's got the potential that you could like double stack Foles and bring, you know, maybe even bring back two KC guys.
All right, from last year's fantasy football champion that we've declared to maybe this year's fantasy football champion, the Cleveland Browns. I know, Mike, you're very high on Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns offense. They take on a Tennessee Titans offense, plays at one of the slower paces in the league, generally a team that's a little bit more conservative with their play calling, a little bit more run-oriented. This game has a total in the mid-40s, Cleveland a strong favorite here at home. What's your take on Cleveland, and is this the time to target them, or do you think that this matchup, in particular with Tennessee, a team that is going to look to kind of control the clock and slow the game down, presents challenges for the upside?
So I think there are reasonable cases against Cleveland because of what you just said about Tennessee challenging that upside. For me, though, week one, I like to, if you're going to go out on a limb, if you have a strong feeling on an offense, how things might go differently from what the market expects, week one, two, early in the season is a good time to play that before Vegas completely catches up, before the market catches up. And because Cleveland's facing Tennessee and the overall game total here isn't all that high, I don't think there's going to be a ton of ownership. And our range of outcomes love Nick Chubb and Odell Beckham Jr. as two guys with incredible ceilings. And I think you know, Baker Mayfield, I don't know if people realize like how good of a quarterback prospect he was coming out, you know, arguably the best quarterback prospect coming out since Andrew Luck came out. And we saw when Freddie Kitchens was the interim head coach at the end of last year, they were more aggressive and much more successful overall. Now you bring in Todd Monken from Tampa Bay, a guy who had Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston throwing on second and 10 all the time with really high yards per attempt, with really high intended air yards. And I think there's the potential for a lot of points for Cleveland. And I'm hoping Nick Chubb, he's not going to go low owned by any means, but I'm hoping he gets lost in the shuffle a little bit just because there are a lot of mid-tier running backs on this slate. And, you know, early in the year, you know, there's not much competition for touches for him. So if he gets a few more looks in the passing game, in a game where they're favored at home, I easily could see 20 plus carries here for a back that we expect to be efficient. So Chubb's my favorite play here, but I think, you know, Beckham and even Rashard Higgins are definitely in play for GPP. Wouldn't consider him for cash games.
Yeah, so I think this is an interesting situation to talk about simply because I think Odell Beckham is going to carry ownership simply out of necessity, because this main slate just doesn't have as many of the high-end wide receiver options that you're accustomed to. We lose DeAndre Hopkins, we lose Michael Thomas, we lose Davante Adams, just to name a few of those high-end options. And so as a result, with salary pricing so loose on the whole, you know, Odell is one of the highest priced wide receivers. He's one of those few guys that's left in the, you know, in the first tier of wide receivers that's going to be available on this main slate. It's basically him, Julio Jones, and Tyreek Hill are the three guys before it kind of takes a dip off. And so I think there's going to naturally be some level of ownership on Odell. And that's my lone concern for this Cleveland stack as a whole. I don't think Baker will draw ownership, but I think Chubb and Odell might. And that's where I'm a little bit stuck. I would really like to try to be early on the Cleveland offense, but I want to keep an eye on kind of what the ownership projections suggest as the week goes on, because I think just a lack of spending on the whole is going to prop up Odell a little bit more owned than he would be if we had all these games on the main slate.
Yeah, and if you're going to if you do want to run an Odell stack and differentiate, you know, maybe take a stab at Corey Davis, who our projections like is a value wide receiver. Initial ownership projections have him in the low single digits. Don't think he's going to be owned. Other than that, I'm not really too interested on anyone on the Tennessee guy. On Tennessee side, you're going to get low ownership on any of these guys, but it's not a good game script for Derrick Henry. I don't think Deion Lewis has the upside. I'm just not really buying too much on the Tennessee side, except for some Corey Davis.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, while I like Cleveland's defense as a whole this season, and I intend to use them quite a bit, and I think they could have a stellar performance here, Tennessee is just not the type of offense that usually generates ceiling performances from opposing defenses because they run so frequently. I will still certainly use Cleveland in my player pool by all means, but I will be emphasizing some of the other high-end defenses a little bit ahead of them. Let's move it over to Washington and Philadelphia. We're talking about, you know, fantasy football Super Bowl champions in our mind. You know, the Philadelphia Eagles have legitimate Super Bowl aspirations this year with Carson Wentz back healthy, just a loaded roster on the whole, and they open up as huge home favorites against Washington here. This is a game that I think has a lot of intrigue for me, because this is a game that I could see playing very, very one-sided. Obviously, Vegas kind of sees that with Philadelphia favored by double digits. It's now moved to in the total only in the mid-40s here. But this is a game where, you know, sometimes we talk in DFS about onslaughts where you play, you know, a quarterback and a few skill position players from the team and the defense, and you're just hoping for one of those like 41-0 type games where the team just dominates, you get the touchdowns right, and the defense shows out as well. And this is one of those, this is the game, honestly, that looks like I would play it that way on this slate. I don't think there's any other games that I'm looking at as potential onslaught situations, but Philadelphia is an attractive situation to target for me.
Yeah, the difficulty in Philadelphia is simply we have them pretty spread out because they have such a deep roster and they're such a deep team that it's difficult to get any individual skill player popping a bunch. We have Carson Wentz as one of our better QB values, and then not too much else going on here. If you look at our range of outcome projections, the Philly guys look better in the 90th percentile projections because they have such a high team total, and if you guess right on the touchdowns, it's going to be really strong performance. But when you're spreading things out and we don't know who's going to score the touchdown. So when we're doing our projections, we have to divvy up partial touchdowns and whatnot. It's difficult to get one single guy up there. I think DeSean Jackson, assuming you know he's fully healthy. I know he had, I think he broke his finger.
Finger issue.
And seems like he's okay. I do like those guys with a high total offense who can break a big play. Initially coming into this game, I had some interest in Chris Thompson on the Washington side. And I think if you're doing like full Philly onslaught and you think Washington does just enough or falls behind so far early that there's a lot of passing down situations and a lot of checkdowns, that he's somewhat interesting on DraftKings. But the issue I've found as I look at the slate more and more is just there's so many good high volume mid-tier running backs, and salary is not too much of an issue this week, that if I'm fooling around with cheaper salary, it's probably not coming at the running back position.
Yeah, I agree there. And I would also say that in general, Washington, I would say, is a complete fade for me on FanDuel. I'm concerned that there just won't be scoring opportunities there to generate upside. And FanDuel, you really need to emphasize on touchdowns. DraftKings on the full PPR, also with the bonuses in terms of the 100 yards receiving or rushing, you can often get there without scoring. And so I would be, any play from Washington for me would be pretty much DraftKings only. That opportunity cost at the running back position does make it harder to justify Thompson, although I will still probably have some exposure to him in some MME builds with, you know, big onslaughts from Philadelphia. Trey Quinn would be the other guy that I'd be interested in there. Not as much targeting the outside wide receivers. I think Washington, in the absence of Trent Williams, is really going to struggle to protect Case Keenum, and I think you're going to need to see the ball out of his hands quickly. So, you know, running backs, tight ends, and slot receivers would kind of be my target if I'm considering anyone on Washington, but those will only be MME builds for me, no cash game considerations. And then, as you mentioned, Mike, because Philadelphia is so spread out offensively, I don't think there's a lot to love from a cash game perspective. But I do love Carson Wentz. I think he's one of the best cash game quarterback plays on the slate. You don't necessarily need to pair him with anybody because he can spread the ball around. But I feel very confident Philadelphia is going to generate scoring drives. And historically, they've been a team that has been very good at converting in the red zone with a quarterback on a pass TD percentage. They have a 70% pass TD ratio in our projection model. Any other notes here on this Philadelphia-Washington game, or should we skip ahead to Atlanta-Minnesota?
No, I think we can skip ahead to Atlanta-Minnesota, which is one of the more intriguing games to me on this slate. I'm a little surprised that Atlanta has a team total in the low 20s as 3.5 to 4 point underdogs. Depending where you get them, that's a bet I kind of like, is Atlanta on the road here. This is a tough one because we like a lot of the Minnesota skill players from a projection standpoint. But there's a lot of talk about, you know, Minnesota being team established to run this season. And, you know, what's that going to do to pace if they are able to control the game? You know, that could deteriorate the fantasy upside on both sides. Expect Dalvin Cook to be really popular on both sides. He's currently our third best projected FanDuel value. He's up there on DraftKings as well for us. Just a combination of the workload, the price tag. And if you boost up his market share targets for the, you know, Atlanta versus running backs type thing, which has been a thing for a few years now, they funnel targets to the running back position. He looks really good. I would say in tournament. So I think in cash games, you know, he's really a fine play on both sides. I think for tournaments, you know, maybe jumping to Diggs, Thielen a little bit more makes sense. If a lot of people are going to play Dalvin Cook, you get some leverage off of that because they're probably not pairing Cook together with a receiver in GPP.
Yeah, so I think Cook is a cash game building block play in week one. I think he's one of the best plays on the entire slate for a lot of the reasons you outlined. One of the great things about our projections is they are all customizable, both at the team level in terms of play calling. So you can adjust run pass distribution, you can adjust touchdown run pass distribution, but also on the individual player level. So if you do believe that someone like Dalvin Cook is going to benefit more from this individual matchup and push his targets even higher than the 14% baseline that we have for him, you can do so in our customizer. Reminder, promo code LAUNCH will get you 10% off if you are not a premium subscriber at Daily Roto. So I think Cook is very much a premium play on this slate. and one that should come with hefty ownership. I will be monitoring the gap between that ownership and the Thielen Diggs ownership to help guide my GPP allotments. I think if the gap gets really wide, then you certainly want to, in GPPs, use that leverage against it. If the gap remains relatively tight, as it is in very early ownership projections, where we've got like Cook around 23% on DraftKings and Thielen and Diggs around 16 to 15%, then I'm going to have a harder time like specifically trying to take a stance. I'll probably just let the optimizer run and see what comes up there. Cook can obviously be played in those stacks too, because he is a receiving back and he's very competent in that level. And I think the thing that is nice about those is Atlanta has some of those big play receiving threats that are very comfortable to bring back, whether it's Julio Jones or whether it's Calvin Ridley. Julio should come with some ownership, same reason as Odell Beckham, basically that there's just not enough high-priced wide receivers on the slate, so some of those guys are going to come with some ownership. But I don't think Ridley will come with nearly as much, or Austin Hooper. I think both of those guys are certainly fine bring-back targets. I'm probably not as super excited about Falcon stacks, just in general, you know, in terms of like Ryan, Julio, Ridley, but they have been successful in the past. Are you targeting Falcon stacks as the kind of other side of this game?
Not really. I think, you know, if I decide to take a stance on Diggs Thielen and I have some Minnesota stacks, I'm certainly going to look. There's enough on the Atlanta side that you would bring it back with a player. You mentioned Julio, Ridley, and Hooper. I'm sure in MME I'll get some Atlanta stacks, but they're not one that if I were playing single entry or three max that I would force. They're not one of my primary stacks. And as you noted with our initial ownership projections on Minnesota, there's a chance that they're just chalky, you know, across the board and it funnels down appropriately, which is basically what we have now. All three are kind of chalk, Cook being the highest. It's a pretty efficient market in that case. And as you said, sometimes when that happens, you don't have to take a big stance against the market. You can kind of just let it run based on the projections.
Yeah, I kind of think this will be the second heaviest owned game on the slate after Kansas City, Jacksonville. Is that your feeling, Mike? Because Cook's just going to dominate so much ownership. And then all these wide receivers are like the best wide receivers that are kind of available from a season-long perspective.
It's hard for me to tell, you know, how much is I think a market will like the game or how much I like the game, but we've got the Carolina Rams game coming up in a bit that I think could challenge it, at least on DraftKings with the way they have the pricing.
So safe to say top three in ownership though for you on this slate, you think?
I think it's going to be top three. There's a couple games, you know, not to get too far ahead, but there's a couple games, Detroit, Arizona, Tampa Bay, San Fran, that I think a few weeks ago everyone thought were going to be the chalk games, and now that's what I'm struggling with, is are they not going to be chalk, or do I just not like them now that I'm looking at the slate? So I'm assuming other people don't either.
Sure. All right, let's move it over to Baltimore and Miami. Miami has one of the lowest implied totals, I believe the lowest implied total on the slate at just over 15 points. They're a huge home dog here. It's an unusual situation in that, you know, Miami is a team that is obviously planning for the future. They just traded away Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills right before the season started. They've depleted their talent quite a bit, but they have a lot of picks upcoming. Baltimore has been, you know, pretty much a really good team for basically a decade plus now. They're just a very consistent team. Usually you do get some big home field advantage from Miami early in the season, because what they do is their stadium has these shadows that basically cover the home sideline and expose the road sideline. So you're just sitting there kind of baking in the sun. But I don't think it's as big of an issue when teams are coming right out of training camp and they've been kind of practicing during the summer. Baltimore, I don't really have, like, this game just doesn't have a lot of plays to it in general. I think you can get behind a Lamar Jackson play as an individual option. His receivers, I think if they're going to hit, are going to hit with big plays. So I think from that perspective, and they'll come with no ownership, there's some semblance of upside and low own upside with like stacking Lamar Jackson. But honestly, it's a situation where I have a tough time finding plays in this game that I'm excited about beyond the Ravens defense.
Yeah, the Ravens defense, you know, with pricing being somewhat soft early, it's a little bit easier to justify paying up for a defense. You know, the argument on the Miami side would just be that they're all so cheap and someone's got to get the volume, but
yeah,
there's also a chance it's an absolute train wreck. The volume spread out, you know, there's probably a little voice in everyone's head that sees Fitzpatrick just randomly ball out early in seasons and, you know, not play him, but maybe hope you get the right cheap receiver with Albert Wilson at 3,900 there on DraftKings. But ultimately it's just really not worth it for me. On the Baltimore side, I could see in tournaments like playing some Mark Ingram just because mm-hmm. the touchdown equity, you know,
yeah.
If this game goes how we think it's going to go, we could just see and Baltimore is a team that runs a ton of plays. So you could yep. just see Mark Ingram, even without a huge carry share, get to 15 to 20 carries. And if he gets the red zone looks, you know, a pretty big game. That's more of a FanDuel play where it's half PPR. You don't have the full PPR, and the touchdown equity matters a little bit more.
But yeah, a two touchdown game for Mark Ingram would not shock anybody week one, and it's certainly in the range of outcomes, and he's priced affordably enough where that would be, you know, in the conversation for you know, GPP winning type play. You mentioned Baltimore as one of those teams that runs a lot of plays. One of the reasons that they're able to run a lot of plays historically is because their defense has been so consistently good and it limits opposing teams' plays. And we see that with our plays projection here. Miami with the lowest on the slate at just 55 offensive plays expectation. That is generally not a great thing for fantasy defenses. You want your teams, your fantasy defenses, to be able to play against teams that are going to run plays so you can get more upside in those opportunities. I think the quality of these plays are going to be very good for Baltimore's defense. So I don't want to knock Baltimore's defense by any way, shape, or form. But just historically, you know, be careful about like thinking about low totals being something that correlates necessarily with fantasy defense success, because what really correlates with it is generating sacks and turnovers and turning those into pick sixes. With Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's always in the mix. And with Baltimore's pass rush, that certainly should be in the mix, but they will have one of the lower subset of opportunities is our guess based on our projections. Let's move it over to the Rams-Carolina game. This is the game that, Mike, you were wanting to look ahead to before, and this is the game that you expect there to be some ownership. This is the game when, you know, when salaries were first released and the schedule was first released, honestly, this was the game that caught my attention that I was really excited about. The injury to Cam Newton in the preseason, the sprained foot, it sounds like he's going to practice early in the week, and I don't think there will be limitations, but we have to monitor that. That's the one thing that's holding me back slightly from all the enthusiasm I had kind of coming into the season with this game. But these are two offenses that we like quite a bit. We expect the production on both offenses to be very condensed. We expect them to be successful offenses this season. This game total is up over 50 once again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one of the three like totals that's over 50 on the slate. How are you approaching this game? What stands out to you from a cash game or a GPP perspective?
Yeah, so initially, just from a betting perspective, I liked Carolina in this game, +3 at home. Thought it'd be high scoring, really big on their offense. Of course, now with Cam, you know, we got to make sure he's healthy. But I just think this Carolina offense, kind of like the Cleveland offense, could be an offense that just takes a huge step forward. You know, Cam wasn't fully healthy last year with the shoulder. The shoulder looks good this year. You've got two young emerging receivers in Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore. They figured out last year, you know, let's just not take Christian McCaffrey off the field, and that worked out pretty well. So I just could see this being really high scoring. And the big thing, though, is the price tags on Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore on DraftKings. Curtis Samuel's 4,200. DJ Moore's 5,500. It seems difficult for one of those guys to not hit value, you know, unless we see a way more spread out approach or the offense is just way worse than we think. But any sort of median game for this Carolina Panthers offense involves one of those guys hitting value on DraftKings. FanDuel, they're good prices. You can still use them in cash games, but there's some friendlier price tags on other receivers that makes them less valuable comparatively.
Yeah, and I think with Curtis Samuel on DraftKings being so much cheaper than DJ Moore, I think Curtis Samuel is going to garner a ton of ownership. I think he's a very strong cash game building block at 4,200. Would feel very good about him. He was obviously the probably the most hyped player in all of preseason, especially or all of training camp and into preseason, especially kind of early in training camp. It was just every day on Twitter, highlight videos of Curtis Samuel making big plays. I think they're going to scheme him the ball in space quite a bit. And I think what Carolina has done is they've gotten a lot of guys on their offense now that can run after the catch. And, you know, the old Carolina offense with like Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin was a bunch of dudes that, you know, they were trying to they basically were trying to expand Cam's catch window in terms of where he's throwing balls. But there wasn't much after the catch. These guys now with like crossing routes and screen plays, you get the ball in their hands and it's relatively high value completions with the upside of breaking big plays. So I'm really excited to see this Carolina offense this year. I hope Cam is able to stay healthy. Hope he's his normal mobile self because he brings so much fantasy upside when he's out there. We haven't touched on the Rams offense at all. We've been gushing all over the Carolina offense. But the Rams offense, I think the big question mark is where we left off at the end of last season, you know, into the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. And that's what do we expect from Todd Gurley?
Yeah, and Gurley, you know, I mentioned if you've got a strong conviction on someone or some offensive entity early in the season is the time to take the chance. If you believe Gurley comes back, gets his workload that he got early last year, is the RB1, now's the time to smash him. I don't believe that. I'm concerned just given how shaky he looked at the end of last year, you know, looked that they extended Malcolm Brown or re-signed Malcolm Brown. They drafted Darrell Henderson. And it just also doesn't seem like week one, why, if you're worried Gurley's health at all, would you give him this huge workload? So I'm off Gurley. I don't think he'll be very owned. So I see it from a game theory perspective. For me, I'm more into the receivers for the Rams. Our range of outcomes really likes all of them. You know, Woods, Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp. Kupp is, I think he could be the lowest owned of the bunch. And he showed a lot of red zone prowess last season, and obviously coming back from the ACL injury, you would have some concern. There were reports that, you know, his metrics tested out better than pre-injury. You know, you always say this, Drew, modern medicine is amazing. Yeah. It's hard to compare, you know, current injuries to past injury timelines just because it's improving at such a rapid rate. So Cooper Kupp on DraftKings, you know, sticks out to me as the low owned piece that if you're coming back on a chalkier Carolina stack, I'd like to have.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. All three of those wide receivers certainly in play for me. I also have the same concerns that you do for Todd Gurley and probably won't have much exposure to him. The other thing from my vantage point is just that early in the season, you're going to have a lot of casual people playing DFS and chasing these big prize pools. And, you know, Todd Gurley, in my opinion, was still going relatively high when he's going in kind of the mid-second round of season-long fantasy drafts. And so there's still some optimism that, to me, is lingering from, you know, he was the fantasy football play of the year the first half of the season last year, and it was pretty much every week on DraftKings or FanDuel. It was like, all right, start my lineups with Todd Gurley, and I'll figure out the rest. And because he generated so much success for people, I think there's still more good memories in people's mind than there are bad memories. And so, you know, projected ownership still has him around 10%. And I'm not going to play Todd Gurley at 10% in the spot where I have concerns. So, you know, if he was 2-3%, I might sprinkle some in, but I'm not going to play him at 10. So he will be off the board for me. I do think this game is very game stackable. I think it's a game that I really hope it lives up to its expectations, because I just really hope this Carolina offense is good. Selfishly, I'm very invested in them this best ball season and this draft season. Mike, let's move over from from the team that has your heart and your attention in the fantasy football world, the Carolina Panthers, to the team that has your heart and your attention in the real world, your Buffalo Bills, traveling to New York to face the Jets, a divisional matchup. From a fantasy perspective, these games usually do not have a lot of compelling plays from them. What say you about this week one contest for the Bills?
Yeah, it's tricky. On the Buffalo side, they're really hard to project. Really sure what their offensive identity is going to be. They released Shady McCoy, of course. You know, I wrote an article on Roto Experts trying to look at, you know, how the Bills could maybe be successful with Josh Allen, an inaccurate quarterback. And my theory would be that they run like a pretty high variance type offense. You know, you've got a high variance quarterback in Josh Allen, sort of embrace the strengths, but that makes it difficult to project a high variance offense. You know, you probably are going to see a lot of deep targets to guys where if he's able to connect with John Brown, you know, you see some upside there beyond our projection. But overall, it's not a team that we expect to throw the ball a whole lot. It's a team that has, you know, even though they don't have great receivers, they have John Brown, they have Zay Jones, they have Cole Beasley, they have Robert Foster, who seems a little bit buried to start the year. They can spread the ball around. So you've got a low team total, teams can spread it around. You know, I'm not too into it. I could see picking some spots with the receivers as one-offs and GPPs just because I think they're all going to be, they are all very cheap and they're all going to be really low owned. As far as the running back situation, I think Devin Singletary is a bit of a trap early on in the year. Market might not even be on him anyways, but for the same reasons, I don't like Chris Thompson for Washington. Just systemically, I don't really like taking too many chances on these cheap running backs. I don't think the upside is worth the uncertainty in their volume.
Yeah, and we'll see what kind of role Frank Gore played. Obviously, you know, if you were playing DFS last year and you were trying to roster Kenyon Drake a bunch, there was enough Frank Gore in the mix kind of each and every week to get very frustrating. And I'm not so sure the Bills situation will be any different this year. It's a little bit of a wait and see approach for me. The one receiver that stands out to me, you know, if I'm taking chances here in GPPs, is John Brown. No matter where he's gone, he's been a guy that can stretch the field and in a big way. And we saw Josh Allen last year when he had his most success, it was throwing the ball down the field, primarily targeting Robert Foster towards the end of the year. But I think John Brown will fill that role primarily for the Bills. I think he also has enough of a potential to be like a little bit of a target hog in their offense if they just kind of scheme things towards him, that he can pay off his price tag. None of these guys are in cash game consideration for me. Josh Allen obviously has the kind of rushing upside that you certainly can consider in GPPs. I don't know that he'll naturally get into a ton of my lineups just with the low implied
even
total going
tough
on the
to
road.
Project. Talk about tight end, because they were all scrambles, so it's hard to build that into.
So it's a very tricky situation. I don't think I'll have a ton of exposure here. I know, Mike, you're a big fan of the Bills' defense. They're priced like they're a pretty good defense, which they are. Do you intend to have any Bills' defense in your builds this week?
I've been taking them at the end of a lot of season-long drafts, but where they're priced right now, it just seems like a low-plays game. We have the Jets project for low plays. It's two teams that are probably going to run the ball at an above average rate. And as a result, you know, I don't
Vandal,
know.
Vandal would be the spot if you wanted it. They're 4,000.
I'd go Jets over Bills on FanDuel. That's where our projections agree, because we have the Bills running a few more plays. And Josh Allen, I think, you know, he's going to be more prone to the big mistakes than Sam Darnold is.
Now, about this, you know, the Jets offense, obviously we'll get to see Le'Veon Bell for the first time in a long time. And when we last saw Le'Veon Bell, he was one of these guys that we talked about playing each and every single week in DFS because the workload was so stable. And so, there's so many touches each and every week. I think that part is a little bit of a question mark early in the season, just because we haven't seen him on the field and Ty Montgomery played so well during the preseason. So I think Le'Veon's an okay play, but not one I'm like super excited about. I think the play I'm actually most excited about in GPPs, mind you, for the Jets is Jameson Crowder. I think there's a couple things that are working well for Jameson Crowder here. The first being that, you know, Robbie Anderson did reportedly get into some practice on Wednesday, but he was kind of nursing an injury towards the end of preseason. Sam Darnold developed a rapport with Jameson Crowder. And if you remember early last season, the rapport that, you know, Sam Darnold had early in the season was with Quincy Enunwa, who was playing that kind of slot role with Jameson Crowder. And I think where you want to attack the Bills defense, Mike, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but is more kind of in the middle of the field and particularly at that slot and avoiding the strong outside corners that the Bills have.
I think they do have a really good slot corner in Teron Johnson. You know, for me, I like Crowder for a lot of the reasons you said, not so much for the matchup reasons, but more so for the other reasons. He's someone that I think in season long leagues has been going way too low. It's just, I'm probably not going to have a lot of this game, period. You know, maybe I'd sprinkle a little Robbie just because of the big plays, even though it's a crap matchup for him. Maybe a little Crowder because I think there are reasons to expect Crowder to be targeted more than Robbie early. But mostly probably just moving on from this game. And I feel the same way about Bell as you. Like, he's an okay play. He's not a great play. Not in the cash game consideration. Not worth it. But the tag's cheap enough on DK where if he did get a regular Le'Veon Bell workload, you're looking at some pretty big profit potential. So I'll have him in my tournament lineups.
All right, let's move on to the 4 o'clock games. We actually have a pretty substantial 4 o'clock late slate here for those that are grinding all the slates. Five games starting 4 o'clock or later on the East Coast, the first of which is the Cincinnati-Seattle game. And this is a game that I think will have a lot of DFS players' attention. Seattle has an implied total up around 26 at home, big home favorites. I think most of the plays are certainly going to stack up on that Seattle side of this game. But I think the first conversation on Seattle is going to start this year with the running game and with Chris Carson, who, you know, saw throughout the course of the preseason his ADP rise aggressively in season-long drafts, ending up going in kind of late third, early fourth round of season-long drafts as he separated and reports came out that he was continuing to separate himself from Rashad Penny. In the Seahawks running game, the Seahawks are big home favorites, which is usually what you want from a running back in terms of opportunity set. He's priced pretty affordably. He's below 6,000 on DraftKings. He's below 7,000 on FanDuel. We've been lower than the market on Chris Carson kind of all off season. Do you feel like we will be lower than the market on Chris Carson week one, Mike?
So in my GPP article I wrote up, I know our standard projections are definitely lower on Chris Carson. I think he was our 11th best value on the board the last time I checked on DraftKings. And actually, it seems like he's moved up since we pushed some more updates there on that split. But I know in our range of outcomes in those simulations, you know, he really sort of popped as a running back at home with a really high team total that I could see. You know, I think we're starting to get closer in line with the market, and I'm not really sure what to do here. The guy, you know, not to flip to the other side too quickly, but the guy that I was just double checking as we're recording that we're way off on the market from is Tyler Boyd right now, who projects to be one of the highest owned wide receivers of the week and who we don't have with a very good projection just because we don't have a huge market share total on Tyler Boyd. You know, we've got it in the low 20s, whereas I think some people are expecting more mid to high 20s with AJ Green out. And, you know, receivers on teams with really low team totals, that hurts their upside quite a bit, even though, you know, on DraftKings, I know full point PPR, if they're throwing a lot late, you can make it back. But that's the guy that seems to be the biggest void between the market and us right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have certainly seen AJ Green command market shares up into the high 20s when he's been the wide receiver one for Cincinnati. Tyler Boyd was great last year, and I believe that was his third season, so one of those third season breakout wide receivers, or maybe it was his second. But he obviously, you know, had a good season both with and without AJ Green. I think some of the splits without AJ Green are a little bit misleading towards the end of the season because Andy Dalton got hurt and they played some just terrible offensive football after that. I'm a little bit concerned for that here. Only 17.5 implied total. And so I'm comfortable. Like, Tyler Boyd's not cheap. Like, he's not expensive, but he's not cheap. So I'm comfortable kind of being on the other side of that. I know one of the guys that in terms of like volume and workhorse back upside on that Cincinnati offense was Joe Mixon that, you know, I think originally we had some interest in as a possible contrarian tournament play, but I'm a little bit concerned after they gave Giovanni Bernard all this money and some of the whispers around that being a little bit more of wanting to get Giovanni Bernard, you know, a little bit more in the mix. I think this Cincinnati offense largely for me is going to be a fade on this slate.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm looking at our team baselines for them and we just have them, you know, really low yards per attempt, you know, low sixes. We have them pretty low completion percentage, around 60%. I know some people think this Seattle defense is going to take a step back, but in a matchup at home as 9-point favorites week one, you know, it might not be the step to pick on them. So maybe there's some room for Cincinnati to be more successful than we're projecting, which would, as a team, which would flow through to some better projections on individuals. But as of right now, I'm mostly off them. I had some interest in Tyler Eifert early on too, as like that cheap tight end, but I'm starting to come off that as well. I probably, you know, won't have much exposure to Cincinnati.
Yeah, you would need the red zone opportunities for Tyler Eifert to really hit his ceiling. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to go out and catch like 8 balls for 100 yards. I think he's going to be a guy that when he pops on a given week, it's going to be, you know, like with a touchdown or two and, you know, 4 or 5 catches. And so I don't know if they'll generate those opportunities. The Seahawks, you know, beyond Chris Carson, I think one of the more interesting situations this week is Tyler Lockett. The Seahawks wide receivers behind Tyler Lockett have been decimated. Obviously, they lost Doug Baldwin to retirement through all the injuries and ailments that he was dealing with. They lost David Moore, who we are not expecting will be available. It seems like DK Metcalf is practicing, but the original timeline was shaky for his availability week one, so I'm not sure if he'll play kind of his full complement. Jerron Brown had a good camp. They released him, then they re-signed him to kind of make things work under the cap after that Clowney trade. There's not a lot of skill position depth behind Tyler Lockett, and he's been one of the most efficient receivers in all of football when he's gotten opportunities in the past. It's a very different role this year, being the lead guy. But he's not super expensive. And I think, I mean, on football slates, I rarely do this because they're so big in general. But if you wanted to take a really concentrated approach in like a 20 max GPP or something like that, I would not think it would be crazy to have an at least one of Carson or Lockett situation, because I feel confident Seattle's going to score points, and I don't know how they score points if it's not through those two guys.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The hard part for me is I feel like I'm running into that situation with a few groups of players. And,
yeah,
you know, so it's the Seattle situation. It's also the Minnesota situation where it's like one of Diggs, Thielen, Cook, and then, you know, the Cleveland situation, because the prices are a little higher, maybe not, but like one of Chubb, Beckham. So I do think there are some offenses where if you feel really good on one in particular and you think about the routes they have the success, where you could do make groups like that. So I agree with you on Seattle. I just think they're probably not the only one out there, which makes it a tougher decision if I would want to do that.
For me, they're the only team that I can think of that I would be like surprised if they scored 30 and both of those guys didn't score. I would say like Cleveland, I could see pass where like they're, you know, I guess their defense scores are like Njoku.
You could have touchdowns to Higgins and Njoku.
There's just not as much depth on Seattle, so I'm very interested in them. I will probably have pretty solid exposures on both Carson and Lockett. I think Carson is a viable cash game play. We're probably not as high on him compared to the market as a cash game play, but I think he's certainly fine. Really have no issues with him. And I think Lockett is a very strong play on FanDuel, where he's priced below 7,000. I think that's an incredible price tag for him. Let's move it. We spent a decent bit of time there. Let's move it over to Indianapolis and the Los Angeles Chargers here. Obviously, Indianapolis, just a completely different team than any of us expected to be projecting at this point after Andrew Luck's surprise retirement. Jacoby Brissett is certainly a capable backup quarterback, but it really does take the air out of a lot of the upside of this game and this team in general, and it makes it a much tougher DFS situation to target. Indy's team total is back below 20 here. They're, you know, basically a touchdown or so dogs on the road here. And the Chargers, you know, it seems like we're not going to have Melvin Gordon week one. He still hasn't reported. It seems very unlikely that he'll come to agreement in time. So, you know, this is a game that looked very differently on our calendar a few weeks ago than it looks right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Melvin Gordon, that we're projecting him out. It seems more than likely he's going to be out. We're really high on Austin Eckler as a cash game play. Our baselines on him have him about 55% of the rushing share compared to about 40% for Justin Jackson. I think that's a very reasonable split expectation. And this is coming from someone who's a little anti-Eckler in season long, but when I see that split expectation and still see him projecting as well as he is, you know, the math just works out. He's just a good play with this team total and with this volume void that Melvin Gordon leaves and his ability to contribute in the passing game. So I think he's one of those mid-tier backs that you can use in cash games. He's going to be – our early ownership projections have him as somewhat chalky. I was thinking if Zeke was out and we didn't have, you know, Tony Pollard, that could change, but – or then we did have Tony Pollard, but now we don't have Tony Pollard. I think that's going to keep people on Eckler. On the Colts side, you know, some of the work I did this past offseason was in shoring up, like, what do our team baselines look like week to week, and how do we use past team data and current Vegas data to project those? And what we found is, you know, the line and the team total make a pretty big impact when you're expecting team efficiency. It's almost more reliable to rely on that than on past team data. So we're able to get what I think is a pretty accurate representation, even with a huge quarterback change from Andrew Luck to Jacoby Brissett. And what our algorithm spits out early on is, you know, a really low expected yards per attempt for Brissett, lower than I expected, kind of like low sixes. We're just not a fan of these really low team total teams. I think there's some room with Frank Reich and that offense with, I just kind of trust that organization a little bit overall, that they could be better than that, which would bring him into play at 4,400. But he's someone that's tough to stack when you start, you know, taking into account they're probably going to throw the ball a little bit less, and you know, they're going to be a bit more conservative, and all of a sudden you lose some volume on T.Y. Hilton, and those guys aren't priced for life without Andrew Luck yet.
Yeah, getting back to Eckler, because I think he is the strongest play from this game, the thing that's really going to drive Eckler's value is the receiving volume. And, you know, we saw last year Melvin Gordon, the 14 games that he played, he had a 15% market share of targets. In the 16 games Eckler played, he had a 12% market share of targets. So a ton of targets going to the running backs in general for the Chargers. And, you know, that's been the case for a few years now. The year before, Melvin Gordon was around 14 to 15% in terms of market share targets as well. I think the addition of Hunter Henry certainly brings some threat to how those targets are moved around. But I also think some of the offensive line concerns that the Chargers will have early in the season without Russell Okun will make it so that they will use kind of the quick hitting passing game a little bit more. And so I'm more excited, at least early in the season, about Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Austin Eckler, than I am about Mike Williams. I think Mike Williams has big GPP upside, especially on FanDuel, simply because he is their primary red zone threat and he's such a good touchdown scorer. And I think he will be, you know, he will be successful during the course of the season, but I think it will come in spurts. I think the other guys that, you know, rely on a little bit lower ADOT will be a little bit more consistent. Eckler's got a really good price tag. Indy is also a team that has pretty good boundary corners. So I think this is a spot for both Eckler and Hunter Henry that I'm pretty interested in. Remember, Keenan Allen missed a lot of training camp and preseason with injury issues. These guys have been with them the whole time. Henry is really, really cheap on DraftKings. I think both of these guys are in play for cash games. I think it's okay to play both of them together if you want to. And I think those two are really the strongest plays at the position for me.
Yeah, Henry, 3,900. If you're going cheap at tight end, it's Hunter Henry in cash games. I don't think there's another cheap tight end you'd take over him. It's just a matter if you want to build differently. I'm excited for the final three games on the slate. The next one, Detroit at Arizona. This one was one of those ones I mentioned had a lot of hype a few weeks ago. A lot of that is tough to tell if it's just like the Twitter bubble that you and I live in, and a lot of love for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and what this offense for Arizona could be from a fantasy perspective, because we expect them to run so many more plays than last year. We also expect them to be better because the O-line's still terrible, but it was epically bad and injured last year. The quarterback upgrade should be meaningful. With Kyler Murray, you know, if you look at his yards per attempt in college and whatnot, much better prospect than Josh Rosen was, even though I did like Rosen coming out, not looking so great on that one right now. So there was a lot of optimism, and from a fantasy perspective, their defense likely going to be bad. You've got Patrick Peterson suspended for the first six games, I believe, or at least the early part of the season, and they're going to give up points. That means they're going to have to throw and run even more plays when you, you know, adjust for context. So now looking at it, I don't know if it's because our projections are middle of the pack on them that I think it's going to be lower owned, or if that's going to happen to the actual market. But this could low key become one of my, you know, favorite stacks if the market has indeed moved off of this game.
Yeah, I think the market has moved off this game. There was obviously a lot of buzz when DraftKings pricing was just released and Kyler Murray was priced so affordably compared to a lot of the other quarterbacks. And at that point in time and season long, he was going fairly high in like drafts on best ball and and whatnot. I think that enthusiasm is tempered with a very vanilla preseason, which a lot of the Cardinals players have admitted that they intentionally did not show anything, the coaching staff, of what they intend to run during the season. So I think this is very interesting. And you talked about how we expect Arizona to run a lot of plays this year. They, like any normal situation, would have been a lot of plays compared to what they ran last year. They were just so unbelievably incompetent offensively that they weren't able to generate offensive volume. And so we're not even projecting them for many plays different than, you know, the Buffalo Jets game, for example, a game that we expect to play on the lower play side. But it's a substantial improvement from last year for Arizona, which I think speaks to the upside here, that we're not even projecting them for like above average plays. And we know Kingsbury's teams in college were among the fastest paced teams in all of college football. So if they come out guns a-blazing, running really quick tempo, air raid, kind of old school run and shoot type style in terms of pace, we could be underrepresenting them quite a bit in the projections. I do think there will be challenges in terms of projecting the volume, especially when they're probably going to be routinely playing some of these four wide receiver sets. And they're also probably going to rotate some of these wide receivers in and out, because beyond Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk, it's sort of like a potpourri of wide receiving options. There's Michael Crabtree. There's Trent Sherfield. There's Andy Isabella. There's Keyshawn Johnson. I think there's going to be a lot of rotation of snaps. So I think it'll be difficult to pin down, but that should keep ownership very low as well. So the only guy that I could see having meaningful ownership from this game, honestly, is David Johnson. And I think any of those Kyler Murray stacks that you want to make, if they do or do not include David Johnson, I think they're going to come relatively low-owned. And I think on Detroit side of the ball, you mentioned the suspension injury situation with Arizona's secondary. I think that does provide good opportunities for both Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones. The concern is obviously just how does Detroit intend to play football? What we saw last year from them is that they intend to play slow, run the ball a ton, grind the clock, and what we've seen from them in the preseason is a willingness to take Kerryon Johnson off the field on certain third down situations, even though they released Theo Riddick. All of those things hurt the upside, but if Arizona is playing at warp speed and putting up points, there will be no choice but to try to keep up. And so I think what you're doing when you're playing this game in GPPs is you're largely playing it as game stack and hoping that all the projection systems cannot possibly capture the increased pace of play that Arizona is going to have. And I think that makes a lot of sense. So for me, I will almost play this game exclusively in game stacks.
And using, I think that makes a lot of sense, using our customizable projections too. I'm probably going to bump up both teams a couple of plays before I run my MME sets in hopes that that occurs. I think there's a route there. You know, Keyshawn Johnson, Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, currently right now we've projected for less than combined 5% ownership on DraftKings.
Yeah.
Marvin Jones is a guy our values really like, have him projected as pretty low owned on both sites and the low single digits on both sites. I think Galladay's fine. He's going to carry some semblance of ownership, him and Kerryon. Not chalk, but not low on like these other guys. So yeah, I'm pretty into this game. I'm just taking some stabs at hoping that Arizona is competent and fast paced, because if they're competent and fast paced, it's going to have an effect on the Detroit side of things.
All right, let's move it to New York Giants and Dallas. This is the game, you know, the national game for Fox, the game that's going to have all the storylines, whether it's Eli Manning starting for the Giants with Daniel Jones, very impressive preseason after, you know, being bashed as a pick, whether it's Ezekiel Elliott coming into, coming into camp after his holdout and being ready for week one here after signing his big extension. You know, from a fantasy perspective, I actually think this game is a little bit trickier for me to figure out. I think Ezekiel Elliott's workload is probably going to be managed in some way, shape, or form week one, especially with how excited the Dallas coaching staff has been with Tony Pollard's development during the course of training camp and preseason. So I think Zeke is probably a little bit overpriced and someone I'm not going to have quite as much of as, let's say, Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey or some of the other high-priced wide receivers. I think Dak is very fairly priced, and I'm pretty interested in playing Dak. Obviously, Amari Cooper is always kind of a huge upside play, and I think those Dak-Amari stacks are very much in play. Michael Gallup had a very encouraging training camp and preseason. I'm pretty interested in him in terms of a GPP play. But it's an interesting situation because for me, you know, I don't know that this game will play with enough pace and enough upside to generate a game stack. And so I'm a little bit caught in between. I think Barkley and Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard, just because of the volume absences without Golden Tate due to his suspension early in the season, all have some level of upside, but it depends on the Giants offense being quite competent, which I have my concerns over. So I'm kind of stuck in this game where I like, in theory, a bunch of plays, but I don't necessarily love them together, and they're falling down my preference list.
Yeah, I don't think I'll have many stacks here. You know, maybe one-offs of Gallup, like you mentioned, like cheap receiver, high team total, high efficiency expectation. That's got a pretty good upside expectation along with that. I want to say that I'll play Saquon a lot, but I want him to be contrarian, and our early ownership projections just don't
have it. Not going to happen.
Yeah, it just doesn't have it as the case because there's not a ton of expensive guys.
Yeah, you got to fill out salary. You got to make a roster work, and people are going to gravitate towards Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley for those reasons. So I don't. That's my thing as well. I do think Evan Ingram is interesting. I think the other top tight ends are going to garner a little bit more ownership. And obviously Dallas, much better prepared to deal with tight ends than in recent years. They've really upgraded kind of the interior of their defense. And so I think the ownership might come in a little bit lower than this initial expectation has them around 10, but we'll see. I think there's a lot of volume opportunity for Evan Ingram, and that's what I like to bank on with tight ends. But I would like to see that ownership closer to 5, 6, 7 than 8, 9, 10. In general, for me this week, the tight ends, if you're thinking about tight end from like a season-long perspective, most of my tight end exposure is going to be to those, let's say, top six guys, Kelce, Kittle, Ertz, Henry, Ingram, Howard. I'm not going to stray too much from that group, so I probably will have some Ingram in GPPs, maybe a little bit of Hooper, maybe a little bit of Njoku, some offenses that I like outside, but in general, most of my ownership is going to be in those top six. From a cash game perspective, I think Saquon's okay. I think Dak's okay, but I don't think there's any primary plays for cash games from this game.
Yeah, I agree. And to continue the tight end conversation, we jump to the final game, which has a couple of those tight ends in the San Francisco-Tampa Bay game, which right now has a 50-game total, 25 on each side, even spread right now. Really interesting game to try and dissect, and I was surprised these guys didn't pop as much in our projections as I originally expected. But we'll start at the tight end spot, where I think because there's a lot of value across the board, you can pay up at tight end this week. You know, it's often a spot where we don't pay up just because there's so much volatility at the position. But whether it's Travis Kelce or George Kittle in this game, those are our top two values on both sides. And a lot of our early optimal lineups make room for one of those two guys. So Kittle immediately becomes the guy in this game I am most interested in. Probably by a good margin. But then I think about how I really want to stack it. Like, I'm high on the San Francisco offense. It's a bad Tampa Bay defense. But you look at the running back situation, you know, is it going to be Tevin Coleman or Matt Breida on a 12-game slate, where we've already talked about a whole slew of mid-tier running backs with Nick Chubb, Eckler, Dalvin Cook, Fournette, Chris Carson, Dave, you know, then we didn't even, you know, then you get up to David Johnson and the studs. Like, where does a timeshare spot fill in, even though the prices are okay? And then at wide receiver, a lot of weird stuff going on with Dante Pettis in the offseason, not really sure on those roles. So it's hard to see where you go to on San Francisco outside of Kittle. And you look at the Tampa Bay side, I think there's more upside here. They kind of have that Philadelphia problem where it's spread out just enough that in our base projections, no one pops as much. They do look a little bit better in our higher percentile outcomes.
Yeah, and I think you talk about the higher percentile outcomes. The guy that I am looking to is the guy who's broken a lot of big plays is O.J. Howard. I think people are going to play Godwin. Godwin's just had so much preseason hype, and so I think Howard is an interesting way to potentially get some low ownership there from Tampa Bay. I will certainly have exposure in any stack I have with Jameis is always a double stack, because you're not getting a ton of rushing value from Jameis, so you're really expecting it through the air and you're expecting multiple touchdowns. I do think this game is very interesting to me because I do think the pace of this game could be strong. You mentioned the San Francisco situation where, you know, they're a team that the last few years, whether it's due to injury or whether it's due to like players not being able to separate themselves on the depth chart, there hasn't been a lot of condensed target share for the wide receiver position. So you end up with these really spread out, like the number one receiver outside of Kittle has a target share of like 15 to 16% in terms of projection. And you kind of spread it out through the roster. That's a situation where they're cheap. I'm very interested in taking shots at upside. And Marquise Goodwin's a guy I've been drafting aggressively in season long as a late round option. I will be deploying him in GPPs as well. He's a guy that doesn't look like quite out of range in play with a relatively low target share. And Tampa Bay obviously was a team we attacked consistently through the course of last season with their secondary really struggling. I don't think that'll change much this year. So I'm pretty interested in both sides of this game. I don't think there's going to be a ton of ownership outside of, you know, Kittle, Godwin. I think everybody else is going to be kind of fairly owned. Maybe Mike Evans has some ownership. And then I think there's going to be a bunch of low-owned secondary receiving options on both teams. So I'm pretty interested in this game. I think this game has one of the chances to play at one of the better paces in terms of high pass percentage teams. So I'm in on the San Fran Tampa Bay game.
Yeah, for me, it's going to come down to ownership. It's possible the two games that were hyped weeks ago, Detroit, Arizona, San Fran, Tampa Bay, if they end up behind KC, Jacksonville, behind Atlanta, Minnesota, behind the Rams, Carolina, if they're the fourth and fifth highest owned games, then I think it's worth accepting a little bit of uncertainty in that volume or a little bit more spread out volume, because if you stack it, at least if you're playing multiple lineups and you stack it in a few different ways, you're going to get the guys that score the touchdowns in one of those constructions if the game, you know, goes off how we hope, and likely going to get them at okay ownership if people are worried about how spread it is, which is kind of was my concern when we, you know, introduced this game.
Yeah, so that'll do it for our inaugural, our first edition of the main slate game breakdown podcast with myself and Mike Leone. The Sports Grid Fantasy Football podcast will roll on this week. Tomorrow's podcast will feature Davis Maddock and Colin Drew going over showdown tips and strategy for the Thursday night opener in Chicago Green Bay. Friday, Davis will be back with betting and picks against the spread on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football podcast. If you want to check out more content from Mike and myself, we will be behind the paywall this weekend at dailyroto.com. You can use the promo code LAUNCH for 10% off your packages. We want to wish you guys all the best of luck in your games this week, and make sure to rate, review, like, and subscribe to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast.
You're listening to the Sports Grid Network.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.